Hi everyone, welcome to This Week in Testing, 19th of July 2024. Simon's actually hosting today, but I think, as we can all appreciate, there's a lot of issues globally at the moment. We'd love to grab your questions and we'll just take it from there. So we'll talk about career growth. We've had some news in the community about career moves. We have David Williams, who's thrilled to share that today was his first day as a QAT architect for the amazing 2i team. And for anyone that doesn't know, 2i is a consultancy that offers really great skilled testers for various companies. Some of their members actually work with Women in Testing and are a big part of our community as well. So that's really nice. David Williams, you may have seen many of his articles. Are just really great thoughts on quality and testing in general on LinkedIn and other areas. He hosted a really great session on value at Test Bash a couple of years ago. Really good. We also have Andrew Burnup, who started a new position as a QA consultant at Opencast. So again, to Andrew, congratulations. Melissa Holland has been promoted to Senior Test Analyst at Bunch. So congratulations again. And Meg Mackey has a new job as a software developer for On The Beach. Meg's another, everyone is really great members of the community. And Meg has been really great at vocalizing and sharing her journey online, transitioning from not just focusing on testing, but the whole aspects of development, moving into SDET and now into a software developer role. Just sharing her journey and some of the trials she's had to go through to get there, lots of things that she's learned. It's been really great seeing that over the last couple of years. So welcome, Simon. I've just been going through the career growth and job moves news that we have this week.
Lovely. Thanks so much for starting things off, AJ. My apologies, my internet went down just literally on the hour. So yeah, unfortunate timing there. One of those days for technology indeed. But yeah, feel free to crack on, AJ. I'll put myself back on mute.
No, it's okay. I haven't covered the community practice, just like our community standards, that type of thing, if you want to kick off there or do you need some more time?
No, I'm good. I guess, AJ, have you reminded folks kind of how This Week in Testing works for those who might be new to this this live audio session?
I'd love to say yes, but I know I haven't done it properly because I can't do it as good as you. So I don't know if you want to recap.
It's all good. I mean, welcome, folks, to This Week in Testing. Yeah, episode number 52, looking at our notes, which is very cool indeed. And it's wonderful to see some folks in the audience who keep coming back. Lovely to see you. And welcome to anyone who's new to this session. So myself and AJ Wilson, we're part of the team here at Ministry of Testing. And we're going to be your hosts for today. So just bear in mind, if you do come up on stage a little bit later when we put it out to the audience, please be mindful of the code of conduct, which is available at ministryoftesting.com. Have a look in the footer for the word conduct and you can read the details there. The session is recorded. So hello to those folks listening on the podcast. So also be mindful of that as well. But yeah, we're looking forward to get stuck in. There's lots to cover and indeed, as of just past 1 p.m. British summer time on the 19th of July, certainly lots happening in the world of IT. So we can come on to that a little bit later. But yeah, AJ, back over to you.
Okay. So just going back to what we're talking about in the community, we had some really great new articles and trends being published. From people in the community as well. Jesper is in the middle of writing about community of practice, so that's coming soon. We have Daniela Gabay, and apologies if I pronounce your name wrong, successfully celebrated MOT Berlin. That's a meetup that we have for Ministry of Testing, and we have them in many different countries, but this is a really great one, apparently. I haven't seen the pictures yet. We also had yesterday at Ask Me Anything about Test Bash Brighton 2024. I can see some people that are listening joined into that also. That was really fun, actually. We were testing the platform that we were using while we were doing the session, a platform called Butter. So that was really good. Jodie Wong is also new to testing and registered for This Week in Testing. So hopefully you're listening. And you can ask any questions that you'd like to ask, but welcome to the community. What would you like to cover next, Simon?
Cool. Because I missed it at the start. Did you mention about that as Ministry of Testing, we can, if people tag us in on via our LinkedIn page, that we can repost that if people are looking for work?
No, I didn't.
Okay, cool. Well, let me share that. So folks, if you are looking for your next opportunity, you can now tag the Ministry of Testing LinkedIn page and we'll repost it. So Rosie Sherry, co-founder and CEO at Ministry of Testing, often says, our network is your network. So we will repost. You just need to tag us, let us know that you're open to work. So for example, yeah, so if you go back through the Ministry of Testing LinkedIn page, you'll see that we've been reposting. So Pranjata Naik, Roy Baker, Subramanian, Arumagam, Alpha Pulikal, Evgeny Barudukov, and Gabriel Oliveira. Those folks are all open to work right now. So yeah, do get tagging Ministry of Testing LinkedIn page, and we will share it with our network and support you as much as we possibly can to find you your next opportunity. Great. Well, I guess we've got a few more minutes, AJ, to dive into what else has been happening in the community. And I guess, yeah, we are very close to putting live just reflections on what's been going on today. So in the news, I guess we would describe it as, you know, CrowdStrike mass global IT outage. So today's technology outage is an unprecedented global crisis, started in the USA and is now ominously rippling across the globe. So AJ, do you want to maybe give a few more details on what's been happening and how as a community we can respond?
Yeah, so I appreciate that the news is still trickling to different countries across the world. So anyone who doesn't have the information, there was a release today. I know someone released on a Friday, woohoo, where Microsoft, one of their vendors, put something out there that had quite a severe bug. And one of the symptoms that people are seeing is a blue screen of death if they have a Windows machine. So at the moment, it seems to be primarily affecting people that use Windows, Microsoft. Now the impact of that, as you can all imagine, anyone who understands risk, who's done risk storming, refinement, Microsoft are used in probably more than 50% of applications around the world. And the people that are using these machines are things like hospitals, airlines, airports, banking. So you can imagine the trickle-down effect that might be happening across the world. And we've had people in the community sharing really great examples of things that we didn't think we needed to do anymore. So for example, in India, one of the airports completely went down. They were able to go back to backup systems to use air traffic control, but things that you wouldn't think about straight away that would impact people are like boarding passes. So what the staff were having to do was get their old Sharpies out and write manual boarding passes for people to get onto the flights. You can imagine the admin overlay that adds into that. And then the other things we were discussing in the community were things like the impacts to hospitals. If you're using a system that can't load, that's got critical patient data, their medicine, things might be automated. And if that machine's not kicking off the automation, are they getting their pain medication? Are they getting the care that they need? Are the right reports being triggered to say, Mrs. Zander is ready for her surgery now, move her down to this room? There's this massive trickle effect and waterfall of issues that can happen from an outage like that. And it'd be really great to hear from the community if there's anything that you observed as a result of this CrowdStrike issue.
Thanks for sharing that, AJ. Yeah, absolutely. It's a big deal. I mean, some folks are saying it's the biggest IT outage since 2017. And I guess, yeah, we have an article going live soon, which you can get involved in, actually. We started a club thread. The club is our forum here at Ministry of Testing. So you can share your thoughts and commentary, share your reflections, or perhaps helpful things related to disaster recovery, et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, we've also already had some comments coming in from the community. So this one from Stefan Papusoy, you know, you have a, reminding us that you have a huge responsibility when your app is installed on a large number of systems and depends on other software apps. Rosie commented from someone else, Y2K has arrived, with a melting emoji face. And James Wadley provided a very short but quick and succinct overview of what happened. So from what I've read, CrowdStrike automatically sent out a faulty channel file. This caused PCs running Windows, mainly Windows 10, to get stuck in a boot loop. Yeah, as you mentioned, AJ, the blue screen of death. And Armando Cifuentes shared another perspective from Twitter. Just going back to paper, as you highlighted there. I think also I noticed that Ben is in the audience. So thank you for listening, Ben. And Ben highlighted that, you know, many servers and CI systems run Linux. So Windows bugs are only caught if tested on purpose. Although if you're making Windows software, you'd think they would make the relocation effort. Good point there, Ben. Yeah, and we've, so as part of this article that is going live very soon after this episode of This Week in Testing, yeah, we've got, we're linking to some things to follow up on this, and we want to keep the conversation going. And I think off the back of this miniature testing, we'll put together a collection of helpful articles related to this topic. And I think, yeah, just as a reminder, if folks aren't familiar, we do host a number of collections. So we pull together collections around topics. So we've got one on exploratory testing. We have some on leadership. We have some on shifting left and shifting right. And we gather this just to make it easier for folks to find helpful information around a specific topic. And I think, AJ, as you mentioned in your post, software has bugs. This is normal, but they can mostly be prevented. This is not a call to give up on software quality. This is a call to help people stay safe. And I'm grateful you shared that, AJ. It was a great, great reminder.
Yeah, I think that sometimes people panic and they start blaming. And that's why there's great things like postmortems and premortems. So for anyone who's not familiar with that terminology, a postmortem is a blameless retrospective where something has gone wrong or something has happened, or you've had an event and you want to learn from it. And almost very similar to a medical postmortem, everyone involved in that situation, friends, family, in our case for tech, it would be stakeholders, product managers, business analysts, testers, developers, quality engineers, whomever is involved. And they say, what actually happened? What was the root cause? What are the actions? What do we need to do on this? Was there monitoring in place? Could it be, have been prevented? If there is monitoring and it didn't catch it, what can we do to improve it? It's a really great tool to have in our toolkit and toolbox. And it comes under risk storming. And this can be done at any point in the software development journey. It doesn't have to be once something's gone wrong. You can do a pre-mortem. So that's where you flip it to, you want to prevent things from going wrong. And you look at things with risk storming, like quality aspects, security. What are the things that are going to cause potential issues to us? What are the risks? Making sure your team knows the difference between a risk and an issue. How can we mitigate those risks? What's in place at the moment that gives us confidence we don't need to do anything for this particular area? How likely is it actually to happen? And I guarantee that these companies and vendors have done this, but sometimes bugs just still do happen. One of the topics that always gets talked about is releasing on a Friday, which is what happened today. So I'd be really interested if anyone wants to put their hand up and come up and discuss it about risks, the kind of things we encounter as testers, what your experience of this kind of event happening is. I know this one is on a large scale, but even small ones, small bugs can have massive impact to people, because that's what we do, for, right? It's for businesses, for people, for the consumers. It's where we add value, and where the value is for the consumer. So I'd love it if some people just joined in and told us their experiences when it comes to risks and releasing into production, releasing on a Friday.
Absolutely. And a great advice, AJ. It reminds me about the prime directive in retrospectives. And I really like the line, is it Norm Kurth? I've just looked it up here. Regardless of what we discover, we understand and truly believe that everyone did the best job they could, given what they knew at the time, their skills and abilities, the resources available, and the situation at hand. And I think it's important to remember that. So it's kind of like, yeah, a bit of hug ups to folks who are having to deal with this across the globe, who are just in full on, oh my goodness me, we've got to rectify this, and what an impact it's had. And releasing on Friday, well, interestingly, we did put out a poll on the club a while back, and we had 67% of people saying they do not release on a Friday. And that would leave us with 33% saying, yes, they do release on Friday. So I thought that was interesting as well.
Hello.
Hi, Savia. If you'd like to introduce yourself, say where you're talking from. I'm from London at the moment.
There we go.
Hi, I'm Sobia. I'm talking from London. I was a software engineer with a lot of QA. I'm trying to switch into becoming a QA engineer. And I just wanted to say, yeah, we normally don't like do releases on a Friday whenever I work so far, just because of this type of problem. And we didn't have a QA, so I just took that upon myself every time. And long story short, as you guys might have seen already, the NHS is affected, which is kind of crazy because, I mean, that's the NHS. But apparently 999 is still working. I'm not sure how, but yeah. So it's good that they had a backup for that, I guess.
So I know that I've made the assumption that the NHS has been affected because I used to work for the NHS. What do you feel would be the biggest impact to them at the moment? What have you seen or heard today?
Yeah, so I'm not even sure if people can like book things, and there's like pharmacy issues and everything. So people might be delayed in getting medicine and stuff like that. And because it's Friday, like, yeah, it's quite crazy in a way.
Oh, yeah, that's just it, the ripple effect. If people need not even just emergency medication, but medication today, be ready for traveling, or it's just they know that this is the last tablets today, they have to get it, and then they can't. Like, what do you even do? Exactly. What's the business continuity? How do you recover from that?
Yeah, and it's also like, what about the patients and the people that are like coming in for appointments or something? I hope they have a backup.
Oh, yeah. This is potential to cause. I know that there's headlines out there that are disruptive, but saying chaos and global crisis, that type of thing, that's just headlines. But it probably is going to have a big ripple effect for quite a few weeks, I can imagine.
Yeah, and also if you work with the NHS for other things, you might have issues as well, if that makes sense. So like if you're booking the app or something, like for appointments or something, that kind of thing. So definitely agree with the ripple effect.
So tell us a little bit about yourself, Sabaya. What do you do at the moment?
Yeah, so I just finished a bootcamp on QA because I'm trying to switch properly from software engineering.
Oh, congratulations. Thank you. How did you find it?
It was actually really good. It was focused on mainly, I would say, gaming industry. And then they branched out on others as well, like website and iOS as well. So it was really good. I really personally.
Oh, lost you there a little bit, Sabaya.
Yeah.
Ooh, do you want to bring someone up ready, Simon?
Yeah, let's, apologies,
Sabaya. Get Sabaya back, yeah.
You're having trouble with your audio. Unfortunately, LinkedIn can be a little bit unreliable whilst we host these events. So hopefully you can jump back in. So Bill, do you want to just try one more time and then we'll see how we get on?
Yeah.
Ah, you're back. Hooray. Yeah.
That was a bit weird. Did you hear me or?
We lost you just at the end there. So you mentioned bootcamp.
Yeah.
So interesting with gaming. And then you cut in and out at the end.
Okay, yeah. As long as this works, I guess I'll keep it short. But yeah, I'm just now trying to see if I can find a studio to work with, because it was mainly in the gaming industry, but I'm open to any industries as well, because I'm mainly after QA. So yeah, that's me.
So you're open to work at the moment?
Yeah, actually. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. So that leads into what Simon was mentioning earlier. If you tag Ministry of Testing in your open to work post, then it gets noted in our newsletter, and we've got hundreds of different recruitment companies that follow that newsletter. and different companies and brands, engineering managers, hiring managers. So that's always a really good avenue.
Yeah, thank you so much. I've noted it down already as well.
Have you joined the Ministry of Testing? There's a free membership.
Yeah.
Oh, brilliant. So you're in the club. That's a really great place to network. Just learn from like-minded people.
Definitely.
Learn from people that you wouldn't think are like-minded or that care or don't care about the same topics. It's a really great environment.
Yeah, it's been great so far. Thank you, guys.
Oh, you're welcome. And just so, because I feel like I'm saying your name wrong.
Sobia. Yeah.
Sobia. Ah, so,
yeah, fine, okay, either way.
Thank you. I'm terrible with names. I'm sorry.
No worries, me too.
Sobia, really appreciate you popping on stage today. And yeah, wonderful to get your thoughts on today's topic. And yeah, just to learn more about you. And yeah, welcome to the community. Please do stick around. AJ, should we get Jesse up on stage?
I think Jesse, you've been waiting
very, very patiently. So let's bring you up on the stage. And Manish and Ollie, we shall get to you soon. So thanks for waiting patiently.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah. Loud and clear.
Well,
how's your week in testing been, Jesse?
It's been pretty dynamic, I should say. I appreciate the most pressing thing right now is the CrowdStrike issue. We actually have been affected by it. And sorry, I think there was some requirements around where I'm from. So I'm in Coventry, UK, and my area of, at least the business that we're in, is field service management and local management across global dark sites. So it's pretty messy right now, I should say. It's the reason I'm saying it's messy, it's more the issue of time to restore, and that has been a thing that has caught us in the blind. So it feels a very much like a pressured situation. But I think one of the things that's very clear as a test team is not starting from the point of blame and pointing fingers. I think it can happen to anyone. We've had to kind of reflect from that side as well so that we can be very clear in how we respond to the issues around it. So it's been a very testing time, naturally, in the sense of just taxing around what systems are back up, what is running, what isn't, what is the redundancy plan around some of these servers, things like that. So, that's kind of what the week has been, Simon and AJ.
Crikey. Wow.
Yeah,
it really does.
It is.
And if you're okay to share, if I may, AJ, sorry for interrupting you there. Just really curious about, like, you mentioned about redundancy planning. Like, do you have, and if you can't share this, then just say, no, I can't share this, but do you have like dedicated teams that just own like business recovery or redundancy planning, or is that spread across teams? What does that look like?
I could share just a bit, and probably in a very anonymous way. Part of our business continuity plan is to talk about things like that. So whether we've either hired and paid for that as a third party person supporting that, or we have direct access to our data centers, then our own in-house team would do some of that. The issue really more is the customers that we have, and that's where it becomes mission critical, because they themselves are reselling the software. And obviously the downtime isn't, well, they themselves, it's the fact that they have bought something from us, who in turn has been affected because of another person. So it's literally a domino effect. And so there's a lot of hand-holding around it to manage the expectation, but also to give a wider picture of why there needs to be a very resilient plan in place. And resiliency is a very broad term in that sense. You could look at it from the customer side, you could look at it at the service provider, even down to the, you know, wherever your data is being stored, who's actually the appropriate data center that you want to go with. It's pretty broad. And so it's not easy for us to say, hey, there's a one pager that covers all scenarios, but I think with the right people and the right mindset, planning for the unfortunate events and almost doing a bit of a dry run when it does happen is part of that plan as well. So I think this has caught quite a few people in a very unfortunate time. I think the previous person who was on the stage did mention about the issue of never deploying on a Friday. That is something that's an assumed policy, more so because there isn't a support team to respond when those issues happen. And I appreciate those things, but I think if you do plan appropriately, if you do need to do a deployment, sometimes it's actually better to do it on a weekend because you have less customers using your service. And we have a flood of users back on a Monday. So it depends on the industry. I do know for my wife, who's a digital midwife, it is a bit of a chaos right now in the NHS. So to give you a very small window into that, if a mother has to be booked in for any bit of patient care, that basically has to go on paper. And that's as much as I could say without getting into issues, shall I say. But that's kind of what you're dealing with. I have friends who are due to fly to Trinidad and Tobago, and the airport is in chaos. You can't rebook. You can't do much things, really. It's a slow domino effect of seeing something 4 or 5 hours ago. Systems are just taking a while to come back on. But in the midst of that, there is a sense of hope that we are doing what we are doing. And we'll, get back to normality at some point. We will learn from it, hopefully. But that's kind of my perspective so far on it.
Yeah, thank you for sharing, Jess. I think you made really good points there that not just redundancy, but anything that comes under disaster recovery or business continuity, there are things that you can put in place, and it is important not to let things escalate or blame each other. I think that's a really nice point that you made.
Yeah.
But just on releasing on a Friday, I'm not adverse to releasing on a Friday. I think if your teams are mature enough, or you've assessed the risk, or it's something that's minimal impact, there's all sorts of different scenarios, but hopefully the team can judge if it's the right thing to do or not. I'm not a fan of code phrases personally or anything like that. I think you should always be ready for peak. You should always be in a state where you can recover. But I appreciate not everyone can do that, and not everyone has the people or the time. It might be a startup, for example, to be in that place. So yeah. I think it's an interesting time for everyone today, and there's going to be lots of lessons learned that will be shared across the community, I think.
Yeah.
Great to hear from you, and thanks so much for sharing. Wow, there's so much insight, and lots to reflect on and think about for sure. Let's get Manish, who has been waiting patiently with their hand up onto stage.
Oh, someone's outside your door, Simon.
There is, yeah. That'd be my wife just popping out. She's working from home today. So
that, or Tinkerbell. Tinkerbell's working from home with you.
Yeah, that's it. So Manish, welcome to the stage. Thanks so much for waiting patiently with your hand up. How has your week in testing been?
Hey guys, first of all, happy Friday, and thanks to the entire Ministry of Testing community for initiating this open to work tagging thing. So, I really like the way you say it. Our community is your community. So I really appreciate you guys for that. Excuse me. And coming back to my week, it's been a rough week. So we have had some layoffs within our company. As everybody says, the show must run on. So we are trying to do everything that we can to support everybody who has been laid off, and see if there is anything that we can do to anybody who got laid off, who got affected. So that's there. So it was very sad to see. It was not a big impact. There was one part of the business that was sold to a different vendor. So those redundant roles have been eliminated. yeah, that was sad to see.
Oh, I'm sorry, it's been a rough one for you and your colleagues, Manish. And yeah, hopefully, as you say, folks can find opportunities and they can move on to other places where they can find, you know, their next stage in their career. But yeah, sorry to hear that.
Yeah, definitely. Tough time. Yeah, those are tough times, especially when you work with somebody for 3-4 years and then without any fault of theirs. And then, I mean, I understand it's a business decision, but again, it sucks, if you know what I mean. Sorry about the language.
I understand. It can feel very brutal. It's like, oh my goodness, like, hang on a minute, we've been working together for all that time, and right, you're not. That's a hard thing to accept, to happen, for sure.
Yeah, hopefully, I mean, they've got other things, better things coming their way pretty soon. That said, talking about the releases on Fridays, I mean, we don't do it right now. We do it on a Tuesday. But back in the day, probably say 6-7 years ago, I was working for a big insurance firm back then. And then we had this Friday deployments, which started around 10 p.m. and then they go till 4 a.m. Can you imagine that? I mean, we were doing manual deployments back in the day. And so as you guys were mentioning about this, so this thing, just refreshed my mind that back in the day there was, at 4 a.m., people, they tend to get tired, lack of sleep, and mistakes do happen, right? So there was one incident where we were deploying at 4 a.m. And then, so the application that we were working on is basically used by the agents, the insurance agents who sell insurances to their customers. So on a Friday, we thought everything went fine. And then nobody uses the agents. They don't log in on weekends. Come Monday, so we have had so many incidents, so many issues that came in from these agents telling that like their application isn't running or it's not opening at all, right? I mean, every time they launched the application, it was getting crashed and it was throwing a 500 or something. Those were some very good lessons learned back then, that's when we came up with a kind of a checklist to see if everything is running fine or not. So we prepared a clear, comprehensive documentation, listing down all the checks that we need to perform to see that the deployment is complete. So yeah, that was a very good lesson learned back then.
I've got a quick question, Manish, if that's okay.
Sure.
Because we don't have a mind blown emoji on LinkedIn, unfortunately. When you mentioned 6 hours to release, mm-hmm. was that because you had multiple teams contributing to that release, or was that just one pipeline?
No, it was multiple teams. So as I said, there are a bunch of upstream systems, and then the data flows through the downstream system. So we have our dependency. So, back in the day, I thought that was the way to do it. But then now that I think about it, it didn't make sense that having all the teams in the call starting at 10 a.m. up until 3, 4, 5 a.m. Sometimes we ran till 7 a.m. the next day on a Saturday. If there is one hiccup at any one place, then all the other downstream systems, they have to wait until that process is complete.
I guess it's a big difference in the last 10 years where people now use toggles and A/B testing and targeted releases, that type of thing. I come from an environment for the last 3 companies where we could release in 20 minutes, but there were still some governance pieces that would take longer because you had to be very careful with what went out into the public domain. So I completely get that it's circumstantial. And just when you said 6 hours, I was like, oh, my heart. I do get that it can happen.
I mean, I thought it was normal back in the day, you know. My previous company prior to that, so we had a similar process, but it wasn't taking 6 hours, but we had to do everything manually, right? I mean, I thought, okay, that's the way to go. But now when I think about it, man, we could have done much better.
Yeah, but it's great that you've got that perspective and that learning process. And there might come a time in the future where you join a team that's still quite waterfall, for example, or mm-hmm. it's a monolithic system and they need that kind of quality testing guidance to bring them into more agile, lean ways of doing things. So it's good that you have had that experience, even if it was negative or you didn't realize it was negative at the time, because it's still part of learning. So
exactly.
Thank you for sharing that.
Right. And then now we have moved into, so right now we use a CMS system where we author all of our content, and now we don't have to wait that long. So all you have to do is like just deploy, and we have everything set as part of our CI/CD. So, I mean, we have come a long way. Now that I reflect upon that experience, we have come a long way. And then I think it just amazes me on how our technology has progressed through these years or evolved through these years.
It makes me think about a few weeks ago, added to the newsletter, one of Ministry of Testing's annual partners, QAs, they did an article called A Complete Guide to Canary Testing. Just reminded of that one. But yeah, it's fascinating, isn't it? How things move so fast and how in different kind of situations and industries and setups, how we can release, you know, from 6 hours to 20 minutes, you know, and multiple times a day. It is fascinating indeed.
Yeah. Is it worthwhile quickly just explaining what canary testing is for some people listening? Because I know not everyone's listening as a tester. Or should we just direct them to the link? Because it's a really great article.
Yeah, I reckon it's worth checking out the article. So I think let me just find the newsletter that it appeared on. One moment. So I do a quick search. So this was on, so we have a newsletter. So if folks aren't familiar with the newsletter, it's a good time for me to remind folks that it exists. If you go to ministryoftesting.com/newsletter, actually it was this week's newsletter that I mentioned it in, not a couple of weeks ago. I'm getting way ahead of myself. If you have a look, there is Software Testing News, issue 479, Habit of a Lifetime. And under the essentials section, there's a link to that article there. So yeah, worth checking out. Brilliant. Thanks for sharing, Manish. And feel free to stick around on stage with us. So we got just under 20 minutes. And I'm very aware that Paul and Ben have both been waiting very patiently to join us on stage. So AJ, I think I spotted Paul put their hand up first. Does that sound about right?
It is, but if you want them to fight for it, I'm more than happy for them to argue. But it was definitely Paul.
All right, let's get Paul up on stage. Let's do that now. Let's wait for the LinkedIn magic to happen. Ah, Paul, you made it on stage. This is great news. How has your week in testing been? Paul,
and for people listening, we do give people time because we do appreciate some people listen on mobile and they might have to come out of different screens to unmute themselves or use an earpiece, for example. So we try and give them some time.
So Paul, if you can still hear us, it does appear that you are still on mute at the moment, so we can't hear you. Oh, it looks like you're off mute now. I will be quiet and we do an audio test.
Testing, testing, 1, 2, 3.
Oh, testing, testing, 1, 2, 3. Received, over, loud and clear.
Like I'm old. Anyway, I was merely saying that I remember going to the Ministry of Testing maybe about circa 20 years ago, not that old, 10 years ago in Glasgow. That's the first time I've done the online bit with you guys. It's pretty cool. But my week of testing has been, well, like a lot of people at the minute, job hunting. I've went through the palaver of working for a company who then decided that the company was not going to continue with test. It was going in a different direction. So hands up, I'm actually here to go in if anyone's got a job or got any contacts.
No, we appreciate you sharing that, Paul. And I think just looking at my notes, I think we boosted that you were open to work at the start of the month. So, yeah, feel free to tag us again and we can boost you again and get you out there the network.
Sounds good. I'm also very wary at the minute that the Royal Bank of Scotland is offshoring all its testers in Edinburgh. Off to India, I believe, and the National Australia Group, which became Virgin Money, are doing something very similar, and that was a big test house in Glasgow. and that's all getting offshored as well. So it's a bit.
I don't know if it helps, Paul, but NatWest Bank, they've just started moving a lot of their teams from offshore to onshore.
Oh.
So in the UK, for example, which is onshore for NatWest Bank, for anyone that's listening in different countries, what they've done is they've done proof of concepts offshore in Goa and other countries. Right. And what they're doing is they want the teams to be in the UK for various reasons. So they're looking for a lot of people in Edinburgh and London. I don't know if that's near you, Edinburgh, but they do have remote options and hybrid options. So they're definitely worth looking at and other banking areas as well. I don't know if it's banking you want to stay with.
I've got 20 years experience. I've done banking, I've done government, I've done private. Let's be honest, I'm a bit blasé about this. It was a guy I used to work with, and he gave me the best advice ever, was just follow the KISS methodology, keep it simple, stupid.
You can't go far wrong. Yeah, you can apply that for everything in life.
Yeah, you'd like to think so. Okay, I'll shut up now and pass on to someone else.
No, you don't have to. You don't have to shut up. We're all here to listen.
Absolutely, Paul. Yeah. And let's help, you know, this community gathers around everyone and does its very best to help each other out and, you know, help people find their next opportunities. So, you know, the fact that you're up on stage is brilliant, right? Like, people are going to get to know you, you know, do get involved in other ways with the community, whether it's jumping on the club and answering questions that people may have, sharing your thoughts, and then people get a sense of like, ah, okay, that's where Paul's at. Like, I get a sense of his experience, what he's up to, what he, you know, is interested in and all that stuff. And it builds up a profile and yeah, find any way that you can get involved. We'd love to hear from you for sure.
I'll give you a top tip that I learned from Ministry of Testing just by joining.
That is good to know.
Yeah. One of the things I found is if you look at the listener list that we've got now, if you hover over them, you can look at their profile and you can connect and follow them. Not in a weird stalker way, but just because you're interested in what they're posting and what they've done, just connecting with people, building that network. And one of the things that I do with some of the women that I mentor is I say, look at who the recruiters are on their list, because if they've been connected for a while, they might be good people. Most recruiters are good people, to be fair. But that's a really great way of connecting with specialized recruitment people in testing or in-house testers, so people who work directly for brands like Rightmove and all these other online brands, for example. Or if there's a niche, if you find people that do something you want to do, look at who the recruiters are and their connections, and that's a great way of finding and building that network for yourself to help you with your job search.
That is a very, very, very good bit of advice, and I will, after I say, what you call it, after I shut up and let someone else go on, I'll be definitely looking into all that and seeing who's out there and see what.
Yeah, it's a good tip because, yeah, people move companies after a while. They don't always stay in the same place. They grow, their role changes, they adapt different markets. And if you're connected with those recruiters, then that's another avenue of you to learn something or see what they're posting, look at opportunities. It's a good little tip. I learned that from Ministry of Testing. So thanks.
Wonderful advice. Well, thanks for joining us, Paul. You are more than welcome to stick around for the next, I guess we've got just about another 10 minutes or so. And we have Ben Doan, a regular at This Week in Testing, who's been waiting ever so patiently. So Ben, let's get you up on stage.
Hello, AJ and Simon. How are you doing?
Hello. I'm not bad. I've eaten too many Tic Tacs, but I'm good.
Oh, what Tic Tacs have you got, AJ? Because hang on, that's a bit of sound effects for the recording. Okay. There you go. Today I have lime and orange, and I think these are my son's, and I have stolen, and I have not told him I've taken them, so I feel very bad parenting. But they just happen to land on my desk, and I'm trying my best not to eat them.
They have fresh cherry menthol with cooling crystals. And just a side note, we're not sponsored by Tic Tacs. I just like them.
we're getting a whole box full for mentioning them. It's brilliant.
I've got the sugar-free ones. You only get 22 mints in this brand, though. But
I absolutely love how you get me on stage and straight away it snacks. This is very appropriate.
Of course.
Totally on brand. For folks that don't know Ben Doan, Ben Doan is also known as the Full Snack Tester.
Absolutely. And a fun fact about Tic Tac. Tic Tacs are both sugar-free and contain almost only sugar because of a weird trick with the way that portion sizes are done with labeling. That almost entirely only ingredient is sugar, and they are also sugar-free with zero sugar because they're just so small they fall below the threshold to advertise that they have sugar in them.
Yeah, I always thought that because they can't be sugar-free if they've got carbs in them.
No. They're almost only sugar. But yeah, there's a whole thing about it. You can read it on their website. They even have it. You don't even have to go to anywhere else. It does explain it. But yeah, because of the way packaging labeling works, they are both 0 grams because they're below the 0.5 grams because each one is less than a gram. It's just because effectively 2 Tic Tacs is a portion and 2 Tic Tacs is flipping tiny. Sorry, the side quest, but it's a one of those fun snack facts.
It's fascinating.
Great side quests, yeah.
It's like a Schrodinger's cat or Schrodinger's sweets or something. It can be sugar and not sugar at the same time.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, it's there's some really great analogies to testing and to quality in terms of it meets requirements, but it doesn't actually give people the thing they think they're getting.
Yeah, I'm just going to say the same thing, Ben. This is a great title for an article. Is your Tic Tacs what it seems?
Yeah.
Something similar like that. Fresh cherry menthol, but not what it is, or something. Yeah.
Meets requirements.
Meets requirements doesn't give value.
Yeah. Well, do you know what? I appreciate it's slightly separate to everything else that we've been speaking about so far, but I've been having some great conversations on LinkedIn, kind of based on some questions that big shout out to the Quality Talks podcast. I don't know if we've spoken about that before on the show. This is Stu Day and I forget who else doing a podcast. Shout out to Stu. But they were asking, and let me get the actual right wording because I did respond to it. Come on. They asked 2 questions. They asked, can testing ever equal quality, and what does good or even great quality testing look like, e.g. how do you know you've achieved it, which I thought was some very cheeky questions. And I was reflecting on the fact that great quality can only be achieved through a loop of design and development and improvement, because which has to be fed by feedback, and that great testing provides great feedback that can feed those design development decisions, and that ultimately one of the biggest blockers to quality is the rigidity you get by having fixed requirements that you can't evolve, and not giving the right people the power and freedom to evolve. So it works very well with the Tic Tac thing, right? Because it meets requirements, but it doesn't necessarily give you the thing you're after.
So on your last point there about giving people the room to evolve and around requirements, what do you do if there's a requirement that, say, governance? We were talking about banking with Paul earlier. Say it's a rule, it's a law, you can't do anything about it. How do you still give people time to improve and adapt? What's your spin on that?
Oh, blimey, that's a great one. So what I would say is, and I say this working with, not working in a financial environment, but definitely in a regulated environment, and that is 2 things are true. One is that even very highly specified rules and regulations require some level of interpretation because they're written with a particular context in mind. And they it's not always universally true that you can letter for letter map them to your context. They often require some level of clarification. So you probably always have to make some kind of engineering and design decision of how am I going to implement the letter of this strict regulation, right? It's usually, even with all that heavy detail, you still have to make some decisions. And the other thing is, sometimes those systems of design, development, and improvement include interaction with external systems, right? So I guess at the extreme, if the regulations are poor or wrong, then there is opportunities to feed back to the related governing bodies and evolve the specifications. You've got to remember that you don't get one version of a specification or a standard or a rule that is the same forever. You get, you know, annual revisions of these things, right? Things evolve and are interpreted. So you can potentially work with auditors or reporting bodies to get clarifications to see if your interpretation is useful, and you can potentially give feedback to evolve the standard itself. So what I would say is you have to not be passive, but be an active citizen in the larger system.
That's a great answer. I don't have any comebacks or anything. That's a really great answer. I think it highlights the fact that sometimes people confuse content and context, especially when it comes to regulation and governance. There's some things that is really implicit and is really clear, and that's the content. And then you've got how someone interprets it or how someone communicates it. You've made really good points there.
Thank you, Ate. And a very good question. I hadn't thought about it quite as deeply until that. It's like, yeah.
So much for a relaxed Friday.
Absolutely.
Hold on today.
Absolutely. Well, no, I did just want to say two very quick things about the more global situation at the moment. One is just the really small thing, which is like, yeah, my wife couldn't return some clothes today because the system was down at the shop that she took things back to. And it's like a really minor thing compared to all the big things that are going on with hospitals and airports and everything else. But it's like, it really shows like this has the opportunity to directly impact so many things. And the other thing was, we were talking about releasing on a Friday, but there's also the commentary on, even on the BBC, listening, because it's all that's been on the news, and listening where they were like, how can a company who must be checking so many things all the time to make sure this works, how can they let this happen? And I just wanted to, you know, to throw in that final Friday thought of be kind to your partners and your service providers and your testers and your admins and your DevOps and all the humans involved who probably did put a huge amount of effort into making sure they got this stuff right and thought that this was or intended for this to be a useful and productive and safe update, and it didn't happen that way. And it's we won't know until it's fixed and there is any public information more detail about exactly as it happened. Although it sounds like James had some good detail that's like at least part of the story from earlier, so that is interesting. And we may never know the full context of how that happened, but it sounds like from the information we know so far, exactly the same thing as is always the pain. Some integration between two different or multiple different teams of humans working on different parts of software, and, you know, some kind of miscommunication. One person at one company does a thing and misinterpreted what the way that the Windows works or whatever else, and you get this kind of huge impact. But it still all comes down to that integration point between teams, between people, between companies. Again, feedback loops, right? The only way we can protect ourselves from this is making our feedback loops safer. So the one comment that I really appreciated is, I'm not so worried about the fact that this was released on a Friday, but why was it rolled out to such a big group in one go? Why was this not more slowly fed a bit at a time?
Well, we don't know that, though.
To roll back?
It could have been
Cyberpunk. Could have been worse, is what you're saying. Very good point. That is a very fair point. They didn't see the thing straight away. Yeah.
No, it could have been worse, but it could have actually been canary tested. It could have been tested in production. It could have been, there's lots of coulds, ifs, buts, right? Nobody will ever know the full story, unfortunately, because there's safe face involved in insurance and that type of thing. But there was a really good chance that it was tested thoroughly and that something was missed or something reconfigured or someone just didn't think about something. Or what I've seen many times in many companies is someone just mutes a test going, oh, that's not an important test. This will speed up the pipeline. So it could be something really in the script that it might be a cluster muck of things where there's 20 different things went wrong. We'll never know until they give us some more information, like you said. But yeah,
that is very fair, and I've definitely been hit by that problem before, where I hope this is very relatable to anyone. Well, it works on my machine and then we put it to the deployed environment and all of a sudden things break miserably, or it worked on the test environment but staging has caught this problem. And like that environment-based testing of actually trying the real thing is so valuable. Okay, you might not have caught this one, but think how worse the world would be without it, because it's amazing how many times I pull my hair out because I'm like, I literally tested this to change from the developer. I ran it on my own machine. It wasn't even the developer's machine. We pushed it to the environment. Why does the build fail on CI when it works on my machine? There are so many reasons for it, and I don't want to get into all the technical detail because it's very discussable, but not in the no time we have left. But it's, yeah, I really do feel for the people involved, the human level.
And for anyone listening, Ben will actually be at Test Bash in Brighton in September, in the UK. So if anyone does want to chat to him, I'm just pimping him out now. he will be there if you want to wave and say hi.
100%. Folks should chat with Ben in person. Totally, totally a great idea. And yeah, talking of Test Bash. So we are going over the hour now, but this is okay. We'll break the rules just a little bit. But yeah, big thanks to everyone who's joined the stage today and to our listeners. And just to remind you about our professional membership here at Ministry of Testing. So you can boost your skills, knowledge and learning by signing up for a professional membership. You can unlock great discounts for Test Bash. We currently got a 50% off offer. If you have a professional membership, you can get that 50% discount on your ticket price. And also you get 100 quid off our new certification courses in test automation. So do go check that out if you are not a professional member right now. Okay, folks. Well, I think it's time for us to wrap up. AJ, anything else to share before I close off?
Just be nice to each other. It's really hot in the UK today. I'm guessing it's very hot in other countries as well at the moment. And there's a lot going on and a lot of people are impacted. And you don't know what's going through people's heads or what they're having to deal with at the moment. So just be kind.
Yeah, 100%. 100% look out for each other. And we will finish up today. So many thanks to people on stage and to our listeners. And yeah, always lovely to co-host with you. AJ, thank you so much. And we will speak with you soon. Take care for the rest of the day and have a lovely weekend. Bye for now.